Few questions I want to raise tonight, see if we get a chance to answer them, or at least address them, in terms of the personality of the Ish Halakha. Number one, we had spoken in the past about fear of death, which is something that any sensitive soul has. And the question is, how does the Ish Halakha deal or address this issue of fear of death? Second question, is the emotional life of the Ish Halakha, is he in favor of melancholy on the one hand and extreme joy on the other hand? Is he a stoic personality? He's very controlled and disciplined about his emotions. And thirdly, the question of what about the personality of Ish Halakha? Is he submissive? Is he active? Is he aggressive? Does he have a definite opinion about things? Or he's just very flexible and he accepts and so forth and so on. So let's see if we can attack these three questions. The first question, which is here in Besorah Yachid VaYachad on 119, and you'll find it in the English on page 73. He says, Gam es pachad hamoves hamushrash kifishinit ba'er liel bashkafat olamo shel ish halakha. So the fear of death is really intrinsic to the worldview of the man of halacha. Minatzeachu, he's able to conquer it or vanquish it, al yidei hadin v'halacha. So this is a phenomenal concept here, that the man of halacha uses halacha itself as the weapon to battle against this terribly depressing feeling of fear of death. Umahafech et hatofa'a shehu apachad leobject shel hakarat ha'adam. That's the key of keys, that one. That what the man of halacha is capable of doing is to transform the phenomenon of pachad into an object. Let's take an emotion and make it into an object. When you say make it into an object of what? Of man's power of thought, of his cognition. That's really interesting. How do you make death into an object?
Is this making into an object, is that to hide from that emotion, to suppress that emotion, or is it just to put that emotion to a new light in order to now not be afraid of it?
The goal here is to convert fear to joy. How would you do such a thing? I mean, it almost defies the rules of psychology. You know, you want to get someone out of fear, there are many methods, but the method of taking that object of fear and converting it into an intellectual study, to make death itself a study, I don't know where we find that. I'm not sure if, let's say, a physician who does, let's say, autopsies on cadavers, and say that that's how he's going to conquer his fear of death. I don't know. I'm afraid it might have the opposite impact. He said, "Kishatzel hamavet hamatil eyamimalav, eymalav," meaning lovesh tzurab yektivit shel nasu. He converts it into a subject hamishubad lanosei, and it becomes subjugated to the person who's thinking about it. It becomes a chefta, he calls it, kafuf legavra, that's his language. Ha'imaf porachat kechalom ya'uf, it just dissipates. And now he tells the story. He says that his father told him about his grandfather Rab Chaim, kishepachar ha'mavet haya tokef al Rab Chaim. If Rab Chaim felt overwhelmed by fears of death that were creating some sort of despair or melancholy, haya hala, what did Rab Chaim do? Mitmacher b'chol mocho, he would dedicate all his mind, v'rucho, and his spirit, all his energies, lehilchot ohalot v'tumat met. Wow. That's something that we may have mentioned in the past, that Reb Chaim wrote so much on these topics. I think somebody once calculated that 40% of the Chiddush of Chaim al Rambam are dedicated to Tumas Mes. Halachot elu hasovvot schar schar linyanim chamurim u'shaylot mesubachot shel Tumat Kever, Tumat Ohel, Tumah Ritzutza, Chatzitzus Ne'atumah, Summit Pasil, Biola Mess. I mean, here the Rav has mentioned so many categories and concepts that would take endless hours to study, and this is where Reb Chaim would throw himself completely into the study of these areas of halacha. And what resulted? Hayamash kitot et heimat nafsho. It would somehow quiet down these, you know, roaring feelings within his nefesh. Umashrot alav ruach shel simcha v'chedba. As I said before, from one extreme to the other, from gripping fear to intense ecstasy and joy. Kishayish halacha yareat hamavet. When man of halacha becomes afraid of death, ha-neshek, the weapon, ha-yichidi, the singular weapon that he has, ilachem epachado gazeh, hu achok ha-nitzchi shel halacha. Now, I'm not a psychologist, but I would be, you know, Daniel's not here tonight, I would love to hear his, you know, as a PhD in psychology, what he feels about this. I mean, do you gentlemen have any sense about this? I mean, it's very difficult for me to understand how this works. I can understand how being mechadish chidushim in halacha creates simcha. Pikudi Hashem Yisham Esam Chilev. I can understand if you told me that you were depressed about something, chas v'shalom, or you're overwhelmed with fear, if you could somehow take that into the Beis Medrash, forget about it, and just throw yourself totally into a deep, profound sugya about davsha, about giri delay, or about Grove and Karov or something along that line. And through the Chidushim you reach an intensity of ecstasy. Obviously there's no room in your heart at that point for despair and despondency. But to say that you can only achieve, you know, the only weapon is to convert death into an object of cognition by studying Hilchas Tumah Ritzutza or the shear of Tumas Oel in Gufo Shel Mes, I mean, that in its own particular way will bring you to Simcha and will just completely chase away the melancholy of death. That I find absolutely fascinating. I don't know if this is, you know, physical or metaphysical. And then he goes on to say that the action of objectifying Koveshet et eimat hamavet, because you take something subjective and you convert it into something objective. And here, again, I'm nishtemim from the Rav's Yediyah in Chachmas HaOlam, in secular knowledge. He has an entire footnote here, which is, I think, in my book, it's number 79. Oh, I guess in the English it's probably number 86. So you can look in the back of the English, in which he quotes a German book that analyzes the life of Tolstoy, the great philosopher and author, and that Tolstoy somehow vanquished the fear of death by some other form of objectifying death as a by converting death into the subject of his artistic creativity. You know, it's almost like if you would draw a painting, if you were a painter, an artist, of something death-like, that would somehow banish the fear of death. But again, he's quoting something which is far, you know, totally out of my league. I never read Dry Dichter, Iris Lemons, you know, by a student of Tolstoy. Hayachas ha-mistoria sholeit ben ha-subyekt ha-makir l'objekt ha-nitfas af pishu hegyoniv lo-psichi gorei mikol mekom sh'adam yachzik et atzmo shalit u-moshel b'nogel et avar ha-omed li-tafes. So when a person is tofes something in his hands, in this case in his mind, he becomes the master, you know, the moshel, the controller over that object. And therefore he's no longer affected by that object. Ha-subyekt moshel object. In other words, if a person as a subject, as an active agent, he can have sovereign rulership and control over the object, the gavra over the cheftza. I remember once the Rav was darshaning about shofar, how tekiyah shofar works, and it was fascinating how the Rav thinks in brisket terminology, even when he philosophizes, because he was talking about the tokea as a mashmia and the shomea. And he was talking about the personality of a person. That a person is both an object and a subject. So the tokea represents that part of a personality who is a subject, and the shomea is the object, and both merge into one personality in the case where you blow the shofar and hear the shofar. And then the Rav in another drasha spoke about Moshe Rabbeinu going up the mountain carrying the luchos. On his way down, he became a subject. He became an object. In other words, he became a chefta. He was no longer carrying the luchos. The luchos were carrying him. But after a while, when he found out how the Jews were doing down there with the Chet Eagle, he couldn't hack it. He couldn't. So he had to drop it. And now the Rav, as we discussed earlier last week, addresses the subject of the objection of Rav Chaim and B'Netziv Mivalozhin to introduce the Musar movement into Valozhin Yeshiva. And once again, because of this concept of the despair of death over death and the berating of man, you know, making man so super sensitive, his emotions are so raw, and then to remind him of death, all these concepts, which were so common in the Musar movement in its original form, were foreign to the Ish Halacha. And that takes us to page 123 in the Besoda Yachid Vayachad, which you'll find in the English on page 76, the paragraph that starts, but. He says, and this is going on to our second question about the emotional life or the inner emotional world of the Ish Halakha. Is it very fluctuating? Is it very stoic? Is it very serious and controlled? What is it? He says, Me'idak Yisun, now that we've established that the man of Halakha is totally opposed to bring oneself into a melancholy mood, you know, dark despair and fear of death, what about the other extreme? What about extreme joy and happiness? He says, Nichve ish halacham bisimcha yetera. Nichve means he's sort of like burnt, or he recoils. You know, he removes his hand from extra simcha. How does he translate extra simcha? Exaggerated joy. Okay, we'll see what that means. But chedva mishulelet kol yisod hegyoni bari. In other words, even joy has to be controlled, has to be generated within a framework by some logical basis. He therefore recoils or rejects shichrus ruchnis, an interesting phrase. He calls it spiritual drunkenness. Ubahatzalat hachayim haro eshet yoter midai. In other words, if you put too much emphasis on just absolute laughter and brevity and, you know, levity and fun in life, you know, that itself is antithetical. Life is a serious business, and we have to keep our serious wits about us. Yesh be'ish halacha, when it comes to the man of halacha, he can be characterized by a certain type of personality. And this personality, he calls Hagigyut, Shabaofi Hagigyut, I think means like a seriousness. And he claims that the English, here in the Hebrew version, he claims that the English is solemnity. Does he? Yeah. And he quotes William James. You know, William James was famous for the religious experience. And in certain yeshivish circles, he can't quote William James. You know, that just doesn't go. V'yamdazu Otzeret biad hadam limashech achre kitzoniyut mufrezet b'chayim hamotzinam. And we're going to see this over and over again throughout Ish Halacha, that the man of Halacha is very controlled and disciplined about his emotional world. We can also see later on that it's very private and he doesn't expose it to others. So what he says here is that the man of Halacha is absolutely inhibited and opposed to extremes in the emotional world, because those extremes absolutely break out of control. hanotel fa'amim laharos et mechitzot ha'itpak'ut v'avlaga. They break out of the bounds of control, of self-control, of restraint. Kshe'ish halacha sameach, hu yodea she'en ha'chayim alei adabot gormim l'simcha mugzemet. You know, he realizes that life is serious and it's short. You know, we're here today, but, you know, we can't just exaggerate our sense of joy within this world. I'm thinking now of the Gemara that says on the Pasuk, Ozi Mole Sokhinu, right? Also, the Lamali, right, Polam Haza. He says, Ein ha'chayim alei adamot gormim l'simcha mugzemet ve'einu madgish et ha'se'a b'sha'at ditza v'gila. That a person has to be aware of the limitations of this worldly existence, and therefore exaggerated joy is something that has to be rejected. And here the Rav invokes a different pasuk, v'gilu bir adam, a pasuk in Tehillim, which is a pasuk that appears over and over again throughout Chazal as, in a sense, a catchphrase for this idea of balancing between gila, which is a very intense joy, and ra'ada, which is trembling. Aval gam b'shat avelut v'dichtucha nefesh, even when Rachmana Litzlan he suffers from grief and mourning, which is very, very painful. Nevertheless, einu goveitz tachat asono. You know, he's not crushed under the weight of these sensations, of these feelings of grief. And he's not given to yeush, ulatzvut koderet, to cold depression. He says, b'chayei haregesh, you know, in the world of emotion, of effect, of affect, with an A, he needs a shivui mishkal. He's got to be very careful about balancing. There should be a certain element of sheket stoic, of stoic complacency or quietness. Let's see how he translates it into. What is he?
Tranquility.
He says, min ha'idia, it's a reflection of the ideal of Shvil HaZahav Shal Aristo, the famous golden mean of Aristotle. Or midmut yukno shal Rambam, it also is the vision of the Rambam of the derech hamutzat, of the middle of the road. Umin yidiat hakrechiyut v'nitzchona al yidei chok halacha. So he has to be totally aware of the fact that halacha will supply him with the means of finding that middle of the road. And he gives one example, which I thought was very fascinating. He quotes the Rambam in Perek Yud Gimel Hilchos Aveilos Halacha Yud Aleph, Kol mi she'eino mit'abel al hamet, kmo she'tzivu chachamim, arei zach zari. The Rambam lashes out against someone who's completely callous and doesn't mourn and grieve the dead. But v'hametza'er atzmo yoter midai, if he exaggerates in the other extreme, instead of being callous and cold, he's overly anguished, intense, you know, over intense intensification of anguish. He says, harezet hipesh, if he goes beyond that which is accepted or normal, then he's stupid, the Rambam says. So again, we're trying to find an equal balance, not to be too removed and yet not to be too intense. Zoe emat hamida shel ish halacha b'tchum ha'effektivi, with regard to the emotional life, he has to find that middle of the road. He's got to find a certain standard, a certain framework. Lefichach lo ita dat gedolei halacha nocha mirikudim u'mecholot. Miholulut mishikrut. Yeah, I think at a Purim Suda, somebody was drinking, and the Rav said to him, "You'll get drunk." Yeah, at a Purim Suda, maybe you should get drunk, right? But you know, the Rav was opposed to drunkenness. You know, he felt that that too much exaggeration in the area of dancing and celebration is not good. It's not acceptable, even when it's done for the purpose of l'shem shamayim. And here he tells an interesting story about the Gaon Mivilna, which I had never heard of, about how the Gaon observed Simchas Torah. He says, Simcha gdol b'leil Simchas Torah b'shat hakafot. Interesting, you know, when you think of hakafot, you think of chassidim and, you know, young guys. You don't really picture the Vilna Gaon, you know, with a great simcha at the time of hakafot. So you're okay, mochekav. He would dance and clap his hands. Shar u'mizamer. Well, I didn't know that the Gaon was into chassidim. So hail me tochet pa'alut v'itlavut. Baram, however, tokenei dibur l'siyum hakafot ha'chozel v'atzavar ha'gil v'ashanan. He immediately snapped out of it. Hakafos are over. Now let's get back to the regular, normal, tranquil life. Shemet achiv shal agra. This is an unbelievable story. Listen to this, Rabbi Osai. When the Gaon's father died, I heard similar stories about other Gedol Yisrael. But he says, halak shmuat avel biyom Shabbat. The first time he heard about his brother's death was on the Sabbath. Lo hitragesh v'lo ifgin shum simanei tzar. Imagine. You couldn't tell on his face any expression of anguish, of grief. Kishat chatam et birchat avdala motzoi Shabbat. Amav delin kodesh l'cho paratz v'bchia. He was able to keep up all those emotions pent up within him. And then right after havdal, Shabbos is over, he breaks out crying. Now, the next part of this presentation is the story about Rabbi Elia Prusiner at the time of the death of his daughter. You remember that story. We spoke about it at great length. I read it again, and I just want to emphasize one thing which maybe I didn't point out, or maybe I did point out, but I forgot myself. He writes that, you know, he put on the tefillin of Rabbeinu Tam and took them off, and then he was there at the time of Yitziat HaNeshama. So again, he wanted to avoid the status of an onen, therefore he quickly put on his tefillin when you're allowed to. He says, ולאחר שחלץ את התפילין וקרחן ברצועותיהם וניחם בנרתיקן, נכנס לחדר הגוססת, and she was still alive, כדי לעמוד בשעת יציאת נשמת ביתו החביבה עליו ביותר. So it's not like he could have done anything to help her, and it's not like he wasn't there when she passed on. He was eager to find out how long she still had to live. But again, the absolute control, the presence of mind, the strength of a person to be able to do such a thing. How do you control your emotions like that? You know, you really have to be. So, you know, when they say that litvaks are cold, I'm not sure what they mean. The Rav, I think, would claim that at its best, in its ideal form, a kalta litvak really means that he's such an ish halacha that he's in control of emotions. And later on, which I don't think we'll get to tonight, maybe we will, but the Rav is presenting such a disciplined and controlled restraint over one's emotions. You know, to have your emotions in your hands, you know, that you have a control, and you push the buttons. You know, I can push the button that says, stop, you know, there's no emotions, it's Shabbos now, not the time for this. And or, you know, I'm not an onan yet, I got to put on my tefillin of Rabbeinu Tam. And I just press the button. And then 5 minutes later, you know, Shabbos is over. I made a mavda. I press a different button. It's like man in control of himself. It's a little bit similar to what we discussed before, that man is both an object and a subject. He's a gavra nechefta. And he steps out of himself, sees himself, and disciplines himself, not just in the physical world. I mean, that's obvious. You know, the halakha from soup to nuts requires of us to control our physical appetites. But to control your emotional life in that extreme way, that's really amazing. And here at this point, we want to turn to page 78, which is a new section. Again, in English, he leaves out the titles. I never knew why. But here the title is Tkifut Hadat V'Koach HaYitzira. And this concept called Tkifut Hadat should be emphasized. We're talking about self-conviction, to the point to which you're not willing to yield. You believe in truth, and you're dedicated to that truth. And the Rav now raises the question of individuality. He wants to know, how would you define the man of halacha? What are his qualities? And the most, perhaps the most central quality, according to the Rav, the ish halacha, is his individuality, his uniqueness, his creativity, his originality. All these concepts define the complexion and the image of the ish halacha. Ha'ofi mitgalem b'tzivyono ha'miyuchad. Every single ish halacha has a character of his own, which is unique to him, has its own tzivyon, means complexion. I don't know how he translates into English. Hatzmauyot gadlav rabah. His independence, meaning he's not moved by anybody, he's going to go head on for what he believes, is something which is great, intense, v'chol mahut ha-nefesh, the very essence of his soul, nikbat al yidei simanim individualim, muvhakim shel ishiyut mishuchlelet. His essence is his individuality. And here I think at this point, the Rav says something about the man of religion, in contrast to the ish halacha. Because he calls him Adam Hadat. How does he translate to Adam Hadat? Oh, humble religious. So we're talking about the universal man of Dat. He says that the man, the ratzon, the will of the homo religioso, shokea kima kima. It's sort of lower, it's on a low flame. You don't really see his individual will or his self, hanochiyut shalom, holechet v'kaba. It's extinguished, it wanes away. Basheru shoef li shaka b'chol havaya, because the man of religion wants to be, yearns and aspires to be totally shakua, I guess you'd say to be immersed, he throws himself into the world of infinity. Ish halacha, on the other hand, megin al hanochi shalom. He is very protective about his own self-image. Al pratiyut shalom, on that which is private individual. Fima reshut yachid shal nafsho. He's very protective. Gam hanochi hu chelek hametziyut hamamashit. Shalacha tiyarav kitsha. Interesting. The personality of the individual is also a subject of and a goal of halachic tahara and kedusha. Interesting. We speak about v'shachanti b'socham, right? That doesn't say b'socham. That the shechina, the kedusha, is in b'tocham, is in the nefesh, and everyone has their own nefesh, a unique individual nefesh. And this again, once again, the general feeling and flow of the ish halach as being someone who's so full of life, embraces everything instead of being throwing himself into infinity and becoming a speck in the cosmos and self-negating. On the contrary, he's building himself up. He realizes his greatness. You remember the piece that we learned about Yom Kippur, how in the Ila service, you know, we say things that sound like despondent and putting man into nothingness, but on the other hand, we say that man is great. Man can do tshuva, man can be judged, man stands in front of God, receives his will and his mitzvos, his chukim, his laws. And now the Rav gets off into a philosophical discussion here, maybe it's even psychological, in which he quotes Immanuel Kant. You've all heard of the German philosopher Immanuel Kant from the 19th century. He says, Kol makom shechok hamusari sholet, whenever the moral law is in control, ha'individualiyut mitgaberet u'mitpatachet. In other words, the moral law, when a man overcomes any temptations and he disciplines himself and he lives a moral life and on a pure life, on a noble level, that's when his personality reaches great levels, exalted levels. And then he has a whole description about the Ish Hadat again, the Homo Religioso. How he tries to climb up into transcendental worlds. But Ish Halacha Kovev B'nigud L'Ish Hadat Individualit Mamashit Bat Olam Hazeh. Again, as we said many times, the man of Halacha is totally dedicated to this world. He's entrenched in this concrete world. He's not trying to fly off into transcendental infinite worlds. Yadua Pitgamo Shel Kant Ki Chok HaMusari Noten Koach La'Adam La'Amod L'Fnei HaMetziut HaNakid Mibli Lafsid Et Anochiyut. That Kant is famous for saying that moral law gives man strength to stand up in front of all these overpowering forces in the cosmic world, and he doesn't have to lose his own anochiyut, his own sense of self. And here he gets into the concept of tkifut hadat that we mentioned before. When the Rav speaks about the man of religion, the universal man of religion in this context, he speaks about a submissive type of personality, a receptive type. And he projects an image of someone who's just overwhelmed by one desire, and that is to seek out the transcendental frenzied experience, and those experiences belong to another world. But if you take a look on page 79, when he describes the countenance, the klaster panim of the ish halacha, or the rabbinic scholar as he calls it, then you're talking about a spiritual stature, a nobility, you know, a brilliant light that shines from his face, a strength of mind and character. We're not talking about someone who's receptive, we're not talking about someone who's submissive, but rather we're discussing someone who just has one thing in mind, to use whatever energies and powers, whatever kishorot he has, to discover the truth. And he doesn't need anything that belongs from the infinite, that comes from the infinite world, the supernal world, in order to discover truth. He doesn't need any miracles, supernatural effects. He will understand the Torah. And when he approaches halacha, he does so out of the strength of his intellect. And once again, here the Rav compares, rather than contrasts, but compares the ish halacha to cognitive man, to the ish hadat with an ayin. And he says that to the extent that the ish halacha relies on his intellect, he places complete faith in his intellect, and he doesn't have to, you know, suppress any need to merge himself with the higher transcendental worlds. So now what becomes the focus of his attention is his own understanding, his own cognitive ability to understand the Torah, to decipher and resolve the most difficult and complex sugyas. And he's a very spontaneous, creative personality. So let's read what the Rav says in describing the personality of Ish Halacha and what the Rav calls the autonomy of his intellect. He says, and here it's in Besoda Yachid Vayachid, page 126, Klaster Panav Shel Talmid Chacham Me'id Al Tkifut Hadat. Again, that phrase over and over again, Tkifut Hadat. V'al Shi'ur Koma HaMazhira L'Mer Chakim. As we said before, it sheds and extends light for great distances. Kulo Omer Kavod Shel Yechidiyut U'Pratiyut. He speaks about the aristocratic nobility that shines forth in the stature of the Ish Halacha. He's not a submissive personality like the Ish Hadat, the man of religion, who is standing, Shomedu Mitzapeli Gilui Hemet, he's waiting passively for some sort of revelation of truth from the upper worlds. Ein Hu Mivakesh, Ish Halacha is not seeking Hit Partzut Transcendenti, Ruach HaKodesh, You know, I'm reminded of the story of the Gaon that Rav Chaim Volozhin tells at the beginning of Nefesh HaChaim, that the Gaon refused Gili Elio. He didn't want any malachim to reveal the Torah. He wanted to work on the Torah, Melus, and discovered himself with his own individuality, with his own creative possibilities. He doesn't seek out chavayotos esot velo chashot baznav me'olam acher, from a different world. Einu zakuk l'shum nisim v'niflaot kedei lavin et ha-Torah, hareyu nigash al olam halacha b'sichlo uv'mocho kmo ish hadat. So let's just summarize a few things that we've seen tonight. Number one, we saw how the ish halacha deals with fear of death, you know, by making death into the object of his cognition, of his study, of his chidushim in olos and in tumas mes. Number two, we saw the fact that in order to stay far away from emotional extremes, for example, to stay clear of melancholy, he rejects that Musar movement, as we said over and over again, in its original form. But he also recoils from any exaggerated spirit in the opposite sense, exaggerated joy. And now we're talking about his tkifut hadat, his individuality, his creativity. Who somech v'nish'an al sichlo, he depends totally and relies totally on his seichel, on his intellect. Vareu ma'amin bo, he actually believes in the strength of his mind. So the strength of his mind is his most characteristic feature. Da'ato machri'a, his opinion will be machri'a, will determine authoritatively, but probably in emiot hayoter gedolot, even in the most difficult, challenging questions and problems, he will resolve them with his personal understanding. He says, "Enu samlev lechishot ha'intuitzia." He pays no attention to the, what does he call it, the whisperings of his intuition. Ulasharim zei seiter. You know, he's not looking for some sixth sense that's above the intellect. And we said before, he's spontaneous, he's creative. Enu min hanichnaim valuvim v'yoter. He is not to be described as a meek personality who accepts the view of others and retreats. On the contrary, there's no extra modesty or humility that characterizes his image. He's very aggressive in his understanding. He believes in the strength of his mind, and he'll go out there to battle for anything that he believes in. If he understands the halakha in a certain way, that's his love of truth. He's dedicated to it. He says, "Ein anivut," meaning anava v'shiflut, "misamnot et diukno shel ish halacha." Adarava, hakav haufyani bo biyoter hi tkifut hadat. Nilcham hu al kol kotzo shel yud shel halacha. Lo rak mishum yirat chet. We're not talking about piety. Elo mishum avat emet. He's totally dedicated to the love of truth. The love of truth is his love. His essential, existential being is love of truth. Einu makir shum samchut acheret. He doesn't recognize any other authority. O amud ha-hora'ah acher, or any other pillar of determining halacha. Chutz l'samchuto shel ha-seichel. He doesn't recognize kimuvan al pi yisodot haKabbalah, according to the authority of tradition. So nehu et haParshanut vaBitzua. He doesn't go for straddling and compromising and being flabby and wavering. Rachut sechlit, he despises any sort of softness when it comes to the intellect, the truth. And here I'm reminded of the story that the Rav told in his description, his famous hesped Madodech Midod for his uncle, the Brisker Rav, when he describes the intense tkifut hadat of the Brisker Rav. He had an opinion, and he stuck to it, and he would fight for it with all his might. never giving up. If he felt it was Shabbos, even though he was on a ship and he needed his passport, you know, he would take out his mukhs and say, by mir Shabbos. That was the Brisker Rav. He was opposed, for example, to Gius Banot. He was opposed to this, the establishment of the Rabbanut. And he would fight for that. You know, if that's his individuality, that's his belief, that's his dat, he has autonomy when it comes to the intellect. And on page 127, the Rav opens the paragraph with Atzma'iyut, which is independence. So the independence of his power of intellect, Magia Lisi, Sheshum Dacha Ba'olam Eina Yecholah Liat Litzayro. No religion on the face of the earth can imagine the heights and the intensity of the power and the independence of the intellect of the Ish Halacha. And here the Rav, for the next few pages, presents various midrashim and statements in Chazal, mostly in the Gemara, but Mitzia Nuntes Omid Beis, about the power of the intellect of the Ish Halacha. I would read to you the English on page 80, but we'll go through the Gemaras. He says, in summary, halachic man is a mighty ruler in the kingdom of spirit and intellect. Nothing can lead him astray. Everything is subject to him. Everything is under his sway, under his control, and heeds his command. And this is something that the Rav is going to illustrate by quoting a whole series of statements in Chazal about the sovereign power of the Ish Halacha to determine the truth, even when he opposes the view of the Beit and Shalmal of the heavenly courts. And it's an amazing presentation here that goes here in the Hebrew from page 127 all the way to page 129. And in the English, from pages, the bottom, I think, of page 79, all the way to the bottom of page 82, one medrash after the other, and then he concludes with statements of Reb Chaim Volozhin to establish the autonomy and the independence and the authority of the man of Halacha. That's the Tkifus Hadas, total dedication to truth, the sovereign ruler over the intellect of the intellect and over truth. So Mr. Shem will pick that up next time.